This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
A recent feature article in the Epoch Times under the heading Life and Tradition contains a fascinating article titled, Does Your Marriage Have a Spirit Squad? A Spirit Squad. You say, well, what is that? Well, it says cheerleaders are needed, pom-poms are optional, but your marriage needs cheerleaders. Well, who are going to be the cheerleaders? Marriage at best has both spouses functioning as full partners and cheering for one another. And guess who the article is focusing on as the couple who did that? John and Abigail Adams, right there in the founding of our country. They had an amazing marriage in which they cheered one another on. If you were to read the letters that they sent to one another when they had to be absent and so on, it is amazing. That's why so much has been written about the life of John and Abigail Adams. But what if your life was going to be written about, say, 200 years from now? What would the Epoch Times have to say? That your marriage was illustrative of a couple of people, a husband and a wife, being the primary cheerleaders in the family of their marriage together? Or are you in opposition on separate teams, does it seem? Today on Viewpoint, we're going to be talking about that with our special guest, Arlene Pelicane. And her book is called Making Marriage Easier, How to Love and Like Your Spouse for Life. Now, that's the part that really caught me, Arlene, how to love and like your spouse for life. A lot of people say, oh, yeah, I love my husband, I love my wife, but you never know it by how they deal together. So today on Viewpoint, friends, that's what we're talking about, how to love and like your spouse for life. Arlene Pelicane joining us from San Diego, California, to talk about this. Welcome aboard, Arlene.
So much fun to be with you, Chuck. I had to laugh about your first example, which is so good, about the cheerleading stuff, because just the other day, I have these little pom-poms, right? And they used to be my children. It was part of like a Halloween costume. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I'm not sure. But anyways, it was part of a dress-up costume that my kids had, a little cheerleading outfit for my girl. And so I've had these little pom-poms. And so my husband was culling through our things, trying to declutter, and I found the pom-poms in the trash. And then I looked at them, and I said, wait, I still like those. I still want those. And yeah. He said, why would you want those? And I said, because this. And I took them out of the trash, and I gave him this little cheer, right? Like I'm showing him. Like,
did you put on your cheerleader outfit?
No, that doesn't fit
anymore. Oh, come on.
That doesn't fit anymore, I know. But we decided that they'd already been in the trash, and I better throw them away. But it was so funny, because I was like, literally, I could use these to cheer for you, and that's why I'd been saving them this whole time.
See.
But he's like, when have you done that in the last 10 years? I guess that's true. With the pom-pom. Not the cheering, but the formal with the pom-pom.
There you go. Wow. That's cool that we connected together on that. Well,
yes.
You know, God has marriage on his mind. He's had marriage on his mind since the very beginning. He performed the first one. He said, it's not good for man to be alone. I'm going to give him a helpmate. And so he did. And she was a helpmate, but also a troublemaker in one sense, because she steered him away from what God had said. And so rather than cheering one another on from God's viewpoint, they actually missed the mark right there in Genesis chapter 2 and 3. So, with that at the start, we find as we look through the book, the Old Testament, God always relates his relationship with Israel to that of a marriage. He uses even the sexual terminology of a marriage to discuss his relationship with Israel. And we find that even in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul talks in Ephesians chapter 5 about this is a great mystery, but what are you talking about, marriage? A great mystery, but I'm speaking of the relationship between Christ and his church. So Jesus is cheering us on. I don't think he has pom-poms, but he's been cheering us on, but we haven't been cheering him on so much And you never, and if you look at some of the marriages in the body of Christ, it's a pretty pathetic cheerleading situation, it seems.
You think, and I think about the Garden of Eden and how it would have been that God would have walked with Adam and Eve in the cool of the evening, and they would have walked together, right, and talked together, and it would be part of their rhythm. And here's God saying, where are you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same today. He wants to walk with us. He wants to walk with our marriages. And I think it's a beautiful picture of Jesus, you know, thinking of him, wanting to cheer you on, wanting to be there, wanting to have that kind of relationship with you, that he's walking with your spouse. And I find that when things are going well with my spouse, I have a soft heart towards him. I have forgiven small offenses, you know, like, oh, you left the toothpaste in a different spot. You know, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
You gloss those over. And then when there's those big disagreements or big things that need to be aired out, that you do. And you do it respectfully, and that's a whole other time, but we can touch on that. But you're getting those things. You're communicating with your spouse. But when things are good between my husband and I, we've got a good relationship, then I've got this really wonderful access to the Lord where my heart's soft towards him, too.
Right.
I find when I'm, like, you know, not, you know, I am right about whatever it is, right, with my spouse, that I tend to also feel like, oh, God, I'm not really being submissive to you because I know I'm holding on to this thing. I'm not.
Wait a minute. I thought you were always right, Arlene.
Yeah, no, that's my husband's role, right? It's always the other person you say. You always say you're right. You're not always right.
Well, at least you're not left. Okay. Now, interestingly, we see how God uses marriage throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. But we also find not only does the book begin with a marriage, but it ends with a marriage. Yeah. And that is the marriage supper of the Lamb. And isn't it interesting? People might not see it this way, but what Jesus did through many of his parables was to cheer on those who would be his followers to be prepared for that wedding supper, that marriage supper of the Lamb, because he's not going to receive anybody with spot, wrinkle, or any such thing. So when Jesus exhorted people, Jesus exhorted us, when his apostles exhorted us, what they were really doing is cheering us on to truly love our spouses as Christ loved the church, submit ourselves to one another as unto the Lord, so that we would be prepared for that great wedding supper. It seems to me that's the bigger picture of the Bible.
I mean, what a huge concept, right? So if marriage is just for my benefit, for me to feel good, feel happy, for my spouse to do things for me, my spouse to always be romantic towards me, then when all of those things fail, you know, because it's hard to do all those things for year after year after year for a person, and we're not meant to, you know, then you think, oh, this is not working. But if we're thinking this bigger picture of how is the gospel reflected in my marriage, how is my marriage making me more Christ-like? How is my marriage making me more patient, more loving, more long-suffering, kinder? You know, all those things. And then to realize, wow, that's refining me to meet Jesus. Like,
well,
that is, then you have a whole new lens.
Well, since we realized that we're holding this treasure in earthen vessels, that means every one of us have got some work to do to be cheerleaders for our spouse. We'll be right back, friends, with Arlene Pelicane concerning her book, Making Marriage Easier. I bet you like that title, don't you? Making Marriage Easier. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint, friends. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. This conversation is always with ever-increasing conviction talk that transforms. And it's possible today that there might be a few ounces of conviction that seep into the conversation because, as we know, none of us is perfect because we hold this treasure, the good news, in earthen vessels, which some have said that means we're all crackpots. So we leak And that means that somehow we need to get refilled with new inspiration, because we don't want to live our marriages by perspiration, but by inspiration. And that's what we're about here today on Viewpoint. I want to make available Arlene's book, Making Marriage Easier, to you. $15 will put this $16 book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. You can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. You know, Arlene, as a practicing trial attorney for 20 years, when I brought a witness to the stand, especially a so-called expert witness, I always had to interrogate them to qualify them as an expert. So let me do that with a minute or two here with you. How long have you been married?
We've been married 26 years.
Okay. That's a goodly number. That's a quarter of a century. That should qualify.
We've got more to go. I know it.
Well, we're just ready to enter 59. So
awesome.
Together, we should have some level of expertise.
That's right.
And that means we still have more work to do.
Yes.
And so you have kids, do you?
Yes, we have Ethan, who is about to graduate from college. We've got Noelle, also in college, and then my daughter Lucy, who's a sophomore in high school.
Uh-huh. Okay, yes. So you have three. We had three. And, of course, those kids, as they grow up, they see what your marriage
yes.
looks like. So they're going to know whether or not you and James, your husband, have been cheerleaders for one another. They're going to know that.
Right.
And that's kind of a scary thing, isn't it?
I think that is the expert witness. Like, if you say, how do we know that her marriage really was easier? How do we know that this was actually working? It would be through the children. It would be through, like, talking to the kids and asking, you know, tell us about your marriage and do you want to get married? And I do think, by the grace of God, that is a great testimony, because I do have three kids who are very optimistic, who want to get married to a godly spouse, who want to have children, who are excited to do those things at age 20, 18, and 15. So I think that is a good thing.
Okay, well, they're the position.
And none of them have dated yet. So they are, you know, they're still on the kind of on the look, you know, to see like, who does God have for me, that kind of thing.
Are they on the look or the hunt?
No, I think that's really funny. I should talk to my son, who's graduating from college, and say, like, you probably should switch from the look to the hunt.
There you go. Well, I hunted mine down, and we got married at the end of my junior year in college.
Yes.
Not necessarily recommended that way, but we did.
Yeah.
And
yes.
So I was 21, she was 20, and now we're at 59 years of marriage in a couple of months.
Yeah.
So
yes.
It can happen, but it requires a great deal of focus and concentration, and marriage is not about selfishness, is it?
No, it's not. So if you have that lens of, wait, what's in this for me? Then it's going to be a problem. Marriage is about giving and serving, and it is a promotion. You know, we talk about, you know, you've had Dr. Gary Chapman on your show before.
Right.
And he talks about that shift in his marriage happened when he realized the Lord wants me to serve my spouse. As Jesus washed the feet of his disciples,
mm-hmm.
as Jesus came to serve, when I had that mindset towards my wife, regardless of what she does, I will serve her. That's what changed everything in his marriage. And I think we live, right, in a culture where we are constantly bombarded, whether it's media, social media, YouTube videos we're seeing, everything is telling us, well, if he or she is not doing something for you, that's probably not right, because they should be there. What have they done for you lately? You know, that's kind of the mantra of, what have they done for you? And
yeah.
If I look at James that way, hey, what are you doing? I do all this stuff for you. What do you do for me? Then I feel entitled. I feel kind of like disappointed. But when I say to him, I think in my mind, I wake up, say, you know what? What's one thing I could do to make your life easier today? What's one way I could serve you today? Oh, you need a cup of water at your desk. Let me refill that and bring that to you without you even asking. Just it's the attitude of, right, like, I want to help you. I want to serve you. And I think we go into marriage this way, of course, because we love this person so wildly and so much. Whatever you need, I will do it. And then all of a sudden, the years go by, and, you know, you, let's say you used to go to all the sports games together, and you loved it so much. And then 5 years in, he's like, I thought you liked baseball because you stopped going. And you're like, I never liked baseball. I just like being with you.
There you go. Know, so see?
So we continue those service types
of
things.
So the husband says, yes. Well, you know, I never really liked those chick flicks, but I did it because I liked to be with you. Oh,
yeah. So the continuance is, you know what? I will watch the chick flick, even though I don't like it, because you like it.
You know, there you go.
That attitude, I'll try it because you like it.
Okay, you've used the word attitude twice, and that's what really caught my attention here, because marriage is largely a matter of attitude. When Jesus began his ministry, there on the Mount of Beatitudes, he spoke about attitudes, and it was right at the very beginning of his ministry. I remember when I was in Israel and had the opportunity to speak for the Mount of Beatitudes overlooking the Sea of Galilee, and it rained on us while the people were gathered in front of me there, but it was a very precious time realizing this is where Jesus spoke to the people concerning their attitudes, and I think... Tell me if I'm wrong, but the very heart, ultimately, of your book, if we're going to be cheerleaders for one another, if we're going to learn how to love and like our spouse for life, it's going to require some major attitude changes on one or both of us.
Yes, I think that's very well said. You know, you think of the Beatitudes, and I haven't thought of this, Chuck, in this frame, like what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness.
And how about the peacemakers?
And the peacemakers and the merciful, right? Mm-hmm. And even those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. So these are happy, like joyful are these people. So you think, whoa, in my marriage, if I'm the peacemaker, if I feel poor in spirit, if I'm mourning because my marriage isn't what I thought it would be, or in a hard spot right now, that, my goodness, God is calling me that he can turn this around and he can make this a blessing and give me joy in it. Because if we hunger and thirst for righteousness, we'll be filled. So within your marriage, even if it's tough, even if it's like, oh, this man is driving me crazy, this woman is driving me crazy, you can say, okay, Lord, I'm going to seek you. I'm going to serve my spouse. And I know you're going to be the one to give me the blessing.
Well, they say faith is a long obedience in the same direction. We're married, and we stay married by faith, don't we?
Yes, and you know, the research and statistics, and I think you would definitely bear this out, is when you are married a long time, and researchers even say when you hit that 40-year mark and more, you enter just this phase where it's like, this is so easy and so happy and so joyful because we've done this for so long, and it really compounds the joy in your life. And I can attest after whatever, 10, 20, and now 26 years, like there is, you stick it out, like that obedience in the long direction. You make a decision that this is, we are never going to divorce. We're going to stay together because I know those are the rules. That's what keeps us safe and good. And that's what God has made. And then we're going to commit. We're not going to act in a way that would make our spouse even consider, like, oh, I want to divorce her, or I want to divorce him. Like, I'm going to treat you so well that you're not going to ever feel that way.
All right.
And when you make that decision, wow, you're going to go a different direction.
Now, you have mentioned the D word, divorce, twice now in this last little portion of our conversation. And I have a fundamental rule. Your very first segment here, decision number one is play by the rules. Rule number one, never mention divorce. Don't use the word. It's not part of your marital vocabulary. What say you?
Yeah, so it's not, I say it here because it's something that a lot of people think about. But for my husband and I, we said from the beginning, we did like a pre-engagement counseling, which was odd but very helpful because his thinking was, if we're going to be engaged and then you find out all these things, like, oh, this is how you do your money? That's how many children you have? that's how involved the in-laws are going to be, you know. So anyway, all that to say, then it was decided, like, okay, we're never going to get a divorce, so this is it. This is the only option.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. So if it's your only option, it's going to change your viewpoint as to how you approach things, because you don't want a life of misery for yourself
or the
other person, right?
That's right. So your problem solving is totally different. The solving isn't like, well, we could separate. It's like, no, that's not an option. So it's like, okay, we have to make this place a place of peace and joy and abundance. And a lot of it comes from serving one another, right, and relying on God, the Holy Spirit, having fun together, you know, so because it's the fun that brought you together. So it can't be all about bills
right.
and problems. You've got to be laughing and having fun together.
All right. So when you say the first item is play by the rules, today people don't like rules. Millennials don't like rules. Generation Z doesn't like rules. I'm going to do it my way. Frank Sinatra's I did it my way is the mantra for America today. So what are these rules you're talking about?
Yeah. And by rules, you know, and I even say it in the book, if it helps you to think of them as guidelines, that's fine. But the idea is, mm-hmm. you know, when you walk into a kindergarten classroom, when I remember this with my kids, if there were no rules and kids could just walk around, they could bite each other, they could hit each other, they didn't have to listen to a teacher, I mean, it would be chaos.
Uh-huh.
So even if we say we don't like rules, you know, we do like the boundaries that help keep us safe. And that's part of our problem, that we're rebelling against all those things. So the rules would be like, and in the book, I talk about the rules that have helped my husband and I.
Right.
One of them would be the power hour, which is having dinner together every day. So, of course, if one of us is traveling.
Wait just a minute.
Yes, yes.
In today's world, it's the idea of I eat when I want to, I eat what I want to. We each have our independence. Does that work for a happy marriage?
I think that's hard because the attitude, again, we're coming back to attitude, is, wait a minute, this is what I want.
Right, so there's no spirit of togetherness.
There's not a spirit of togetherness. And to be honest, we're already so disconnected, right? Our work is probably different.
Right.
We get home, we get on our phones, we're watching different things. So if the mealtime, the dinner, as our grandmothers knew, was the place where, okay, we have to eat, this is a daily connection, this is a place, you know, and obviously we see in the Bible, too, they're eating together all the time. You know,
exactly, that's right.
Feasting. They're feasting and they're eating together because in the meal, now you can talk to each other, now you can get to know one another. So it is really important. So I know the sports schedule can throw things out of whack. What people like can throw things out of whack. But no, it was in our house. It was, mom is serving, I'm serving the same thing to everybody. I don't care if you kids like it or not.
Good for you. Good for you.
So it was a simple meal that everybody gets the same thing and the daily thing. So for us, even now with the two college and a high school when everyone's home, it would feel very strange if we weren't all around the dinner table together.
All right,
so that
Kathy,
is our normal.
Kathy and I wrote a book called The Power of Hospitality years ago.
Yeah.
And chapter 4 of that book is called Breaking Bread, Breaking Barriers.
Mm.
And we talk about how even in families, there's no hospitality. There's no spirit of togetherness.
Mm.
Every person is doing that which is right in their own eyes. Yeah. And the breakdown of the family occurs because they don't break bread together.
Mm.
They don't break bread together, and when that begins to happen, you lose joy, you lose cohesiveness, you lose the spirit of camaraderie,
yeah.
You lose the spirit of caring for one another, and so I think it's extremely, extremely important. Now, one of the things that my wife and I came to grips with was we need to break the Word of God together
yeah.
every day. That's one of our rules.
Yes.
Every day, that's how we start the day. We spend quality time in the Word and in prayer every single day, and we've been doing that for 30 years now. And my wife says it's the most important and powerful thing that's ever happened in our marriage. We'll be right back after this, friends, with our friend Arlene Bellicane, Making Marriage Easier, right on the website, saveus.org.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismier and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. saveus.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at saveus.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived, Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Our special guest today, Arlene Bellicane from San Diego, California, with her wonderful book, Making Marriage Easier, How to Love and Like Your Spouse for Life. Now, that doesn't mean every single day and every minute of every single day, does it, Arlene?
It doesn't. So don't worry. You've got a few minutes each day to be a little annoyed. we have to keep this real, right? We got to
be
realistic.
Yeah, so we do.
We're people, and we're going to rub each other wrong. But the idea is, you know, most days, you know, if you were to describe your marriage, hey, do you like your husband? Do you like your wife? That you should readily be able to say, yeah, I do. Like, they might occasionally bug me, but I really like him or her. It's kind of why you married him or her in the first place.
Well, somebody said marriage is God's rubbing compound to put a little shine on our lives together. God's rubbing compound. Okay. You have a chapter called Cute Girl and Happy Boy. Now, I'm going to put my spin on that, and then I'm going to let you respond. One of the things that my wife and I... we don't have to discuss this per se. We just have kind of an unwritten rule or guideline that's part of who we are, that we're going to dress in such a way, present ourselves in such a way that we're going to be attractive to one another. We're not going to dress down and come in a disheveled way. I mean, certainly if you're doing certain kinds of work, it's going to look like that for a while.
Right.
But overall, we present ourselves in such a way that we're attractive to one another. Cute girl, happy boy. That's my interpretation.
Yes, I like this interpretation. These were some of the pet names we had for each other when we were dating. And
uh-huh.
We had them engraved on our mixing bowl when we got married.
Whoa.
So it had like the year of our marriage and cute girl and happy boy. And it is, you're right. It is that thing, because when you meet, you are so attracted to this person. You're like, wow, I'm attracted to your physical appearance. I'm attracted to your spirit. I'm attracted to what you like and how you approach life. That, you know, everything. You're so attracted. And it is, that's a beautiful, I like your interpretation, because it is the, hey, let's journey through life together and let's keep being the cute girl and the happy boy. And was something that was helpful for James and I early in our marriage, we had read Dr. Willard Harley's classic book, His Needs, Her Needs. And
see, he's been on this program too.
See, and one of his things of the need of the man was for his need for an attractive wife. Now,
right.
This is a little different, because us women, we are not so mindful or care so much about your appearance. We rather like that you treat us a certain way than, oh, you've got to look a certain way. You
right.
know, my husband's lifting weights and waiting like for me to talk about his ripply muscles, which they're great and they're nice and all, but I'm not thinking, oh, my goodness, thank you. Lifting those weights, that bicep looks incredible. You know, I just am not thinking this way, you know?
Okay.
So Willard Harley had written that to be attractive for the woman means to look reasonably close to the woman that he married.
Whoa.
And I really liked that definition, because obviously things are going to happen. I mean, I've got grays in my hair and things are going to happen, but you are trying to be reasonably close to looking like the person that you married. And that is about being healthy, right? It's about taking care of yourself. It's about caring for the other person enough. You know, and this is so classic because, you know, when I had young children, I don't have any makeup on. I've got my sweats on. I'm just doing whatever, trying to take care of the babies and all these things. But if I went out to see a girlfriend, I would, you know, put a little makeup on, get dressed, and go out and see her. And then I realized, like, oh, my girlfriend probably doesn't care. Like, I could probably come in.
But your husband sure does.
But my husband probably would appreciate if I combed my hair before he came home, you know.
Well, you know what? I compliment my wife on those things. In fact, I buy most of her clothes, believe it or not. Yeah. I know what she likes. I know what looks great on her. And so that's a form of cheerleading because she doesn't like to go shopping.
Oh, that's really nice. Wow, you are a rare find. Find something for her and she likes it. It's good.
I have an 85% success ratio.
That's a good rate.
It really is. And boy, does she look great.
That's impressive.
Okay. Giving thanks every day. You have hit upon a big deal here. The word is gratitude. 25 years ago, that's just about the time when you got married.
Yeah.
25 years ago, the Lord spoke to my heart and said, son, you've been a Christian. You and your wife were Christians when you got married, and you've been Christian since you were 5 years of age. But there's something missing. You don't have a proper attitude of gratitude. Mm. And when he began to open my eyes to that, it changed everything in our marriage. It enabled me to be more of that cheerleader. I'm not looking necessarily at where things fall short. I'm looking at where things are making progress and are gaining and are a blessing and are encouraging and so on.
Yes.
An attitude of gratitude. How important do you think that is?
I think it's really foundational to a happy marriage because you cannot be grateful and unhappy at the same time. So if you are grateful, you are feeling that contentment, that gratitude, you know, and the children of Israel, when they were wandering in the desert, the reason they didn't get into the promised land, most of them, is not because of the idolatry. It wasn't a sexual thing. It wasn't a money thing. It was a heart thing. They were saying, God, you've given us the manna, you've given us the quail, but we don't like it and we're sick of it. You give us something else. You know, they were not.
They bellyached and complained and murmured and never were satisfied or happy. You can't have a joyful marriage that way.
Yeah. And let's all admit, you know, that I can be this way. We are all this way that we think, oh, goodness, why couldn't you be more like this? Why do we keep running into the same problem? If you were only a better spouse, then I would be a better spouse, you know, whatever it is, and we're complaining.
Mm.
But if we start to turn that and just say, you know what, let me keep a little journal and let me look for one thing that my spouse is or does that I'm grateful for.
How about every day?
And you write that down. Like, let's say you're having a problem being thankful, right? Like, seriously, you're just thinking, like, I'm not really thankful. Then you just write it down. Well, you know what? My spouse goes to work. That's a good thing. Write it down. And as your list builds, you're going to realize, wait a minute, I have a good spouse. Like, this is a good person. And rehearse that. And thank the Lord for who you have. Thank the Lord for how he's going to bring you out of this season.
And thank your spouse. And that was my weakness. That was my weakness. And I don't know why it was, but I realized I had a speech problem, a speech impediment. The speech impediment was...
And this is the lawyer. The lawyer has a speech impediment.
Isn't that something? See, and so I could talk, but when it came to blessing my wife, when it came to expressing gratitude and so on, it wasn't coming out of my lips. Yeah. Now, why was that? Maybe it was pride. I had to believe that must be it. So I began to break the sound barrier. I had to break the sound barrier and begin as a man, as a husband, to voice my gratitude
so good.
Every day.
I've talked to so many women who what they struggle is they do the things. They serve the dinner. They put on their makeup. They wear the nice clothes. And the husband doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the husband doesn't say, you look beautiful today, honey, or thank you for the dinner. And they wither. Like, they really, over time, they just say, I just don't know what to do. Like, he doesn't even see me. He's not grateful.
Well, but you're not putting any fertilizer on your marriage. How can your garden grow?
So it's a very simple fix, is just start saying thank you. Yeah, noticing and saying it out loud.
Mm-mm-mm. So it's not enough to be grateful in your mind. It's not enough just to thank the Lord. You got to speak the words to your spouse.
Yeah, and these are all reminders to me as well as I'm listening to right.
That's what happens on these programs.
Yeah, I better say thank you today to James out loud.
Yeah, I once had a pastor years ago who had joined me to talk about the problems in America. And at the end of the program, after the program, he said, Chuck, as a result of this program, I realize I'm part of the problem. See, God works in every one of us, and that's what this program is about, discipling for destiny, encouraging and building one another up, and preparing the way of the Lord in our hearts for history's final hour, which is the coming of the Lord. So if we don't get our marriages right, then how can we be prepared for our marriage with the Lord? Something's missing, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is a hopeful thing. It's a hopeful thing of, Lord, you can work in my marriage, and it rendies my heart. So it's a good thing.
Okay. Number three, serve your spouse. Now, you've alluded to that. What does that look like, hands-on?
Yes, it is the thought of how can I help you instead of what are you going to do for me?
Mm-hmm.
And it is looking for things that would bless your spouse.
Okay, so if the wife has to ask James every once in a while, will you please take out the trash? What if James decides to develop a pattern of taking out the trash so he never has to be asked? Wouldn't that be serving your spouse?
That would be serving your spouse. So whether it is the trash or it is, and you know what it can do is it can take the simple chore and make it something noble and beautiful.
Exactly.
So it can take the, you know what, my husband is an acts of service kind of person with the five love languages. So he loves the service. And I love words. Give me words, you know.
Right.
So he's doing all this stuff around the house. He's trimming the trees, he's doing all, and I don't even notice.
He's a man after my own heart.
Right? I don't even notice.
That's what I did already today.
Right? So for me, it's realizing, this is how he is serving me, that he's trimming up all this stuff. I need to recognize that. And then so when I clean up the dishes extra, like the little part of the kitchen extra, instead of that being a mundane chore, I can think this is a way to serve my spouse and
there
it brings some nobility to it.
All right. We'll be right back after this. Friends, Arlene Pelicane, our guest, Making Marriage Easier. You got to get a copy of her book. Be encouraged. That's what we're talking about. $15 will put it in your hands on the website, saveus.org. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Do you have a lonely marriage? A lonely marriage. Loneliness, it seems, has become a plague in the entire Western world. And here in America, even the Attorney General has declared it to be a national emergency. Loneliness. But loneliness in a marriage? That should be a non sequitur. On the other hand, it's very true in so many marriages, even so-called Christian marriages. They're like ships passing in the night. They don't connect. They don't share the same vision. They don't share the same blessings. They don't share the same joys. They don't spend time together. And if we don't spend time together talking, thinking, thanking, and tenderly touching, then where's the joy? Where is the love and the liking of our spouse? So how are we going to rectify this problem? If we have that problem, if you have that problem, how are you going to rectify it? Because you can't keep doing the same thing and conducting yourselves the same way and hope to have the kind of love relationship so you actually are liking your spouse for life. Can't do it. So what do we do? Well, Arlene says we need to take fun seriously. How does that work, Arlene?
This is one of the decisions in making marriage easier. And people might think like, well, that sounds very frivolous. Just have fun. Mm-hmm. But really, that's like the anti-loneliness kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because what happens if you're having fun together, that means you're laughing together. You're anticipating being together. You like being together. You're doing an activity together that you both like or that you find funny, you know, even if you're not good at it. My husband and I have taken up ballroom dancing these last few years, and believe me, it was like a train wreck the first time.
So you weren't having a ball.
Yeah, we were not having a ball. we were the quote-unquote laughing stock, but they all loved us, and they tried to help us. So, but the idea is, right, when you're having fun, you're talking together. You feel heard. You feel like, you know, just I remember the first date James and I ever had that we sat in the little tiny Italian restaurant that closed all around us. You know, it was already closing time, but we just sat there until the last busboy was there because we were talking and listening and feeling so connected and like, whoa, wow, let me find out more about you. And that's what connects. That's what makes you not feel lonely. And when we're too busy, or when we think like, oh, we have to wait until we have more money, or we have to wait till the kids are grown, or we'll just wait till that vacation once a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the right way. You have to think, ask the question like, when was the last time we had fun together?
In other words, you have to plan to play.
You have to plan to play.
And you also have to plan to pray.
And you plan to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And those things connect. Because I think the loneliness component, it's listening to each other. Right, being able to listen, because when you are heard, you feel connected. So having that environment where it's very safe to talk because the other person's a good listener. Most of us are really good talkers, but we're not good listeners, myself included. So
okay,
really, you know,
well, confession's good for the soul, Arlene.
Yes. So I'm an assumptive listener. So what that means is if James is saying something, I'll interrupt him. He'll say, you know, oh, I was talking to Troy, and he said he wants you to go to the thing, doesn't he? He's like, no, would you like to try again? And I'm always thinking, like, oh, I want to show you that I'm with it. But I realize, oh, I just need to be quiet and just listen to your story.
Well, you know, so, that's part of our problem in our relationship with the Lord.
Yes.
Everybody wants to tell him what to do, but nobody wants
that's
to listen
true.
To what he has to say.
That's right.
So God says, be still and know that I'm God. How about listening for a change? So you know how this got resolved in many respects for my wife and I, and I mentioned it when the Lord really moved upon my heart because I had been spending quality time in the Word every day for the first 25 years of our marriage. But he said, now, why aren't you doing that together with your wife?
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Kathy and I said, okay, here's what I think the Lord is calling us to do. You know that I spend quality time in the Word every day, but I think we need to do this together. So starting so-and-so, we're going to get up a certain time so that we're together, and we're going to spend time, quality time, reading the Word. Not reading some devotional, but actually reading the Word. And then we're going to have the freedom to talk together, to apply it, to talk about the issues that are going on in our relationship or our family or other things around us, and to apply the Word of God to those things. You know what? Kathy has told me over and over again now, that is the most important thing that ever happened in our marriage. She said, I actually then felt that we were together and you were listening.
Mm.
Yeah, made when a huge honor, difference.
Yes, honoring God together.
And you know, we do that even when we're not together. If I have to be out of town, guess how we do it? Via cell phone. We don't miss a day. For any reason, we don't miss a day. Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah. It's changed everything. And so actually, to love and like your spouse, that has been a very important key. Yeah, very
important
key.
You don't have to do this by yourself, right? That the more you weave the Lord, the Word of God, prayer, being in church together, in person, physically being with other believers, all of those things are going to boost your marriage.
Now, when you talk about having fun together, and I think fun is a good word, but it's not the only word. How about enjoyment together?
Yes.
You know how that happened? I purposed. Here I was, a very, very busy lawyer. My own office was on numerous boards of Christian institutions and so on, spoke all over Southern California, and yet purposed every Friday night, my wife and I went out together. Mm-hmm. We had a date night, and our kids knew it, and they rejoiced in it. Of course, one of the reasons they rejoiced in it was because now they're on their own.
Right, they got to say, "Oh, mom and dad are out."
Right. Yeah. So
it had a double purpose for them.
Exactly. Yeah. So we don't want to let time drag on by not spending time together.
Yeah. Yeah, the Institute of Family Studies, they did a research about the power of date night and found that 52% of couples don't date anymore, like they never date or it just happens a few times a year.
Right.
But 48% said they do it once or twice a month or more. And those people saw a 15% gain in their overall happiness, not likely to divorce, good communication, et cetera. So that date night, just planning it, knowing that's going to be our happy time together, you get to enjoy looking forward to it. You get to enjoy being on the date. And then later you get to enjoy the memories made on that date.
So exactly.
It's kind of fun because you enjoy it three times.
And then you can think about, okay, how can I change this up a little bit? Do I always, are we always going to go to the same restaurant? Are we always going to do exactly the same thing? So you put a little thought into it and you try to change it up. I mean, even pitchers in baseball have change ups.
Yes.
They have a change up pitch. They throw a curveball once in a while, sometimes a knuckleball. So in any event, we need to do that in order to keep freshness in the relationship, don't we?
Yeah, and that creativity, it's good for all of us, and it's growth. It's the idea of like, oh, we can grow. Like, oh, we've been married 50-plus years, but look, we've never been to this restaurant. We've never tried this activity together, and that's really, really good for all of us.
Yeah. Okay, but there's also something to be said for at least having a definite plan to where if you haven't thought of anything else unusual, at least you're going to do that.
Yes.
Okay. So what's special for you between you and James? By the way, what does James do?
He's a realtor.
A realtor. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So he's a salesman.
Yes.
A promoter.
A promoter, a negotiator.
There you go.
A team player, a trusted advisor.
Ah, how wonderful is that? So what is special to you that you and James really enjoy?
You know, I have to go back to the dancing thing that I had referred to earlier, that we've been going ballroom dancing. And it actually is really fun when you're waltzing together in this big room and the music's going and you're looking at each other and you're whirling around. It's really fun.
But not waltzing with somebody else, right?
Waltzing with James. Yes, Waltzing with James.
All right.
And it's super fun. Yeah, you're looking at someone else. It's really fun. No, I understand this.
What else do you and James like to do that brings joy and togetherness?
We go through phases, you know, and he is usually, so I'm like the concert, play, movie, travel, reading.
Okay.
So I like those kinds of things.
I'll bet he's a participatory kind of a guy.
James likes, like, no, the opposite. So James will like the reading, you know, or whatever, traveling. He likes sports, but doing them. So he's...
That's what I just said, participate.
Oh, I thought you meant just like watching something. I understand.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yes, you're right.
He's not a voyeurist. He wants to participate.
No. Yes. Absolutely.
And then he wants you to participate.
That's exactly right.
See?
That's exactly right. So he's skiing, camping, rowing, like all these.
See, James and I need to get together. James and I just need to get together. And we can cheer our wives on in that regard.
That's right. Oh, it's great.
Okay, so the question then is, how does Arlene respond when James wants to do that kind of thing together?
Yeah, so in the early years, it was camping, right? It was we were newlyweds.
Right.
And he says, let's go to this camping trip with our church that we're going to. We'll meet people. And I think, okay, that makes sense. That's a good thing. But I don't want to go camping. I've never gone camping in my life.
Right.
I have to sleep in a tent. This sounds terrible. So on the car ride, the two-hour car ride up the mountain, I'm completely quiet. Do you want anything to eat? No. Is it too hot or too cold in the car? Whatever. Do you want to listen to the radio? I don't care. So right before we got to the campground, he stops the car and he says to me, are you going to be like this all weekend? Because I'm here to have fun, and this is not going to be fun if you're like
Whoa.
This. And I started crying my newlywed tears. I said, I know that I'm not being nice. I'm sorry. I hate camping. I'm scared. And isn't it funny? Then you get to the place with the people in public, and then you're like, oh, hello. I love camping. You know, you can act that way, but inside you're just like, I don't like this. And let's just say that experience was like a C+, B-, but I have gone camping many times since then, sometimes in a cabin, sometimes in a tent, sometimes with access to a bathroom, sometimes without access to the bathroom. And I've come over the years just to think to myself, you know what? If you like it, I will try it. And so let's do this thing. I'll do it, you know.
Well, that's how we got started. I was involved in mountaineering and rock climbing and so on. And my wife went along, and sometimes it was a bit struggle for her. But for 5 years, that's what we did. And then one day I broke up the camp and we went to a motel. She says, okay, that's it. That's what we're going to do from now on.
Now all of a sudden, this is very good.
Yeah. So anyway, it was a season. We look back at that, and we look back at it with memories and joy. And you're right. There are seasons, and there's a change up that needs to happen, because we don't want our lives to be just same-o, do we?
We don't. That's right. And it does bring the adventure into things. And it is why I think God brings different people together, because you both end up places that you wouldn't be by yourself.
Right. And you know, that change up is something that God has done in our lives in a different way. And that is, he has actually called me to do a lot of things that stretch me to the max. And in stretching me to the max, it stretched my wife to the max.
Yeah.
And those are memories that we have, and we look back at those, and they bind us together, realizing that together we were willing to follow what the Lord was calling us to do and see his work over those years in our life. So it brings joy, it brings love, but it also helps us to like one another for life. Thanks so much, Arlene, for joining us here on the program today, Making Marriage Easier. What a delightful topic. What a delightful title for the book. And friends, you need to get a copy of it. We all need encouragement. $15 to put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at $6 for postage and handling. And become a partner with us. That's what we're doing. We're discipling for destiny. We're encouraging. We're strengthening. We're preparing the way of the Lord. Yes, indeed, to our marriages, for history's final hour. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.